It's time for Declare Your Independence with Ernest Hancock.
Believe me when I say we have a difficult time ahead of us. But if we are to be prepared for it, we must first shed our fear of it. I stand here without fear because I remember. I remember that I am here not because of the path that lies before me, but because of the path that lies behind me. I remember that for 100 years we have fought these machines. And after a century of war, I remember that which matters most. We are still here! Tonight, let us make them remember. We are not afraid!
Welcome to Declare Your Independence. With me, Ernest Hancock, here in Phoenix, Arizona, from the beautiful studios of Freedom's Phoenix at the Farm. Now, today we're going to have a treat for a lot of you. I know that we're going to have a lot of questions on this, and we need to get an inside perspective on what's going on in Mexico with the drug war. Now, we have a gentleman. He's an author, John Gibler is a writer. He's based in Mexico and California, and he's author of the new book, To Die in Mexico, Dispatches from Inside the Drug War. Now, it's published by City Light Books, and it's just coming out. And he's also Unconquered Chronicles of Power and Revolt. Now, this is a unique perspective that we're going to be able to learn from, because what's been going on, and we're here in Arizona, so the rest of the country may not be as privy to what's happening, and also how it's being, amped up by the politicians to advocate for more power that they want. But what's happening is there is a major, major drug war going on where countless numbers of people are being found in mass graves. They are being killed. They're being executed. They're being wrapped up in blankets, in the ditch, shot in the head. And this is getting to the point to where they're just a bunch of faceless bodies. And what has happened is sooner or later, someone of note, someone that's a loved one of somebody important, was going to die. And when that happened, here we go. And we get to talk about what are the real reasons behind this. And I'm glad to welcome John Gibler to the show to help us understand what's going on. Now, John, please go ahead and tell us a little bit about your book. I've read some articles that you've written. I've looked at some of the references to a lot of the stories that you covered. And I'm very surprised at what our rhetoric here in the U.S. is in regards to this. Can you please tell us about your book and what you're trying to accomplish?
Indeed. Thanks very much for having me on the air. It's a pleasure to be here and be in the airwaves with your listeners in Phoenix, Arizona. The book, To Die in Mexico, is my attempt to step outside of the cops and robbers myths about the drug war and look into that world from an alternative angle. And really, one of the main, I think, most destructive myths, which you just hit on, about this whole thing is that if you're found dead, wrapped up in a blanket and all that, there's an assumed logic that you were somehow dirty, that you thus in some way deserved it. And that assumed logic does two very destructive things. One, it justifies, in a sense, the government's total incapacity or refusal to actually investigate homicides. The Mexican government opens up investigations into less than 5% of the homicides that take place, which means that in the only past 4 years of this so-called drug war, more than 35,000 murders are not even being investigated. They're guaranteed impunity. And the second very destructive, socially destructive thing that this presumed guilt does is it creates a society that becomes numb to so much violence, so much death. You see the bodies on your television screens, newspaper headlines, and the photographs on the front page, or you hear about it on the radio, and you don't think about those bodies or that mass of death as anything related to human beings, people with families, people with lives and histories and dreams that were shattered, their families destroyed. And so one of the principal objectives in the book is to try and break that siege of anonymous death, of death without names, and look in from a side view and find out who are these people who are getting killed. So many of them simply have nothing to do with the drug trade. Of course, there are people who are involved, and even if they're involved, one supposes that we now live in societies with institutions of law where you should be guaranteed a fair trial, all of that, not a post-mortem death sentence, which is what is being inflicted in this war. And so one of the things I did in the book is I spent a lot of time traveling with, riding around with, talking with local Mexican journalists on the front lines of this drug war and profiling them, their lives, and then also highlighting their work because they're the ones who really live there and who grew up there, raised their families there, and can, I think, discuss with incredible depth, detail, and complexity what's happening. So I ride with journalists in Ciudad Juarez, in Culiacán, Sinaloa, in Monterrey, in Mexico City, and in Reynosa, and try to tell the stories both of who they are and what it's like being a frontline journalist, a small local paper, or radio station in the front lines of the drug war in Mexico, but also all the stories they've uncovered that help kind of, again, break this idea of an anonymous mass of death, victims without names, without histories, and look at the humanity and the particular stories behind all of these massacres, which end up revealing truths about the drug war, which are very, very different than what you hear, I think, on the majority of the mainstream news broadcasts, or especially from the government press releases.
Okay. You've given us a good start, and I want to read a little bit, and we'll get into the one case that has really brought this to the front. And let me ask you this before I read this: what kind of coverage has your work gotten in the United States, and whatever it has gotten, from what political spectrum are you getting attention?
Most of my work is online or in small print media that tend to be on what's considered the left. A lot of my work right now gets the most coverage from community radio stations. That's where I do probably most of my work. I find that local reporters at community radio stations seem to have just more of a hunger to really talk about issues. And so they reach out, they call me up, see something I've written, and get me on the air.
A prominent individual, and we'll get into the details, John, help us with that when we come back. We're getting ready to go to the break, but I want you to know you have a prominent individual's young son, that's 24, is just one of the faceless killed, and all of a sudden now we got somebody. And he is prominent enough that he is brought before President Calderon. Calderon has him come in, and the father had to leave from an event they were speaking at and a layover in Amsterdam. And he sees people buying and selling drugs legally. And there's no AK-47s, no dead bodies strung all over the place. There's no gangs, none of the prohibition disease that's going on there. And he talks to Calderon. He wants to meet with him and so on. And he tells Calderon that in Amsterdam, people would buy and sell drugs and they don't kill each other. What Calderon has done with his drug war is shameful, you write in the article, and has no pardon. Calderon would respond in so many words, "You're right. I was mistaken. But there's no turning back now." Why? When we come back, I want to talk about this, the end of prohibition, the end of unnecessary violence for plants. There is something else going on here. There is something else that is fueling this gangster mentality that's going. We went through this. It was called prohibition with alcohol. Did we learn our lesson? Or was it the lesson that we learned was how to use government and law enforcement and the drug kingpins to make a boatload of money and increase your power over people? Because if that's what they learned, They learned their lesson well, and how will we overcome it? We'll talk about that when we come back.
It's time for Declare Your Independence with Ernest Hancock.
Fight for here on Declare Your Independence. With me, Ernest Hancock, from Phoenix, Arizona, BEA, beautiful studios of Freedoms with an S, freedomsphoenix.com. Yeah, I was distracted reading some stuff here. Let me tell you that we found a new friend. All right, we got us a new friend, John Gibler. Am I saying that right, John?
You are, yeah.
Okay, now he's author of two books. I mean, his first one just a few years ago was Mexico Unconquered, Chronicles of Power and Revolt. Give me a 30-second on that book. What were you talking about there?
That book is a focus on the social mobilizations across Mexico, resistance movements from teacher strikes to indigenous people's mobilizations, anti-electoral fraud groups, and also an attempt to really analyze the nature of impunity and the outrageous administration of state power in Mexico that leads to so many uprisings and mobilizations.
Okay, so who is trying to conquer them? They're unconquered by whom?
So that's a reference, of course, to the 500 years of colonial legacy. First, the argument is that first the Spaniards arrive and there's a direct war of conquest, and that with the independence wars in the early 1800s, the period of conquest was just reconfigured. It was still a colonial era, but now instead of Madrid being home base, it's Mexico City. And then again in the 1910 revolution that tore up Mexico for almost 10 years, that all it did was reconfigure the political class. But even though the vast majority of the conquest has taken place, it's still ongoing. There are very large regions, or relatively large regions of Mexico, where indigenous populations are almost untouched by the state. And of course, that has taken the form of neglect, of marginalization over the past, especially, half a century. But now with discovery of new mining techniques, ecotourism and things like that, the state wants to dispossess once again people from the already marginalized lands that they were pushed into to take over those lands, extractive industries and all of that. And so there's still 500 years later, these processes of conquest and revolt taking place.
So we've been through this here, Native American, same thing. So I'm looking at a map, and you see you have different portions of Mexico that have not been industrialized or citified or developed or highways going through and railroad and all that kind of stuff. And you say the word, they've been neglected. Maybe sometimes being neglected by the central planners is better than not.
Right. I mean, the irony here is that, fast forward a couple hundred years and the neglect and marginalization might have been better than the kind of attention they were given.
Right. May you, is that the Chinese curse? May you come to the attention of important people and
right.
Live in interesting times? Well,
exactly.
They're like, hey, we're coming to the attention of some important, powerful people, and it's starting to get interesting, especially when people are dying around you. So I'm looking at also the connection between these two books, Mexico Unconquered, Chronicles of Power and Revolt, and then To Die in Mexico, Dispatches from Inside the Drug War. Now, are you finding that the people that are conquering or want to conquer, are they profiting? Are they funded? Are they better off because of drugs being illegal and gives them the power to be able to conquer? Or is the government trying to oppose another power that's funded by the drug war? Or are they one and the same? I mean, what's the connection between the central planners and the people that are making a profit from the central plan by making drugs illegal in this prohibition? Give me the connection.
I absolutely think that the drug war, as it has been administered, especially since the end of 2006, has become the new spearhead of conquest. It's being used by the state to militarize society, heavily fund the police and military forces, which are known to be entirely infiltrated by the drug trade itself, to supposedly fight itself. And it becomes a pretext for as I said, mass militarization. And also, since there is now just this overwhelming amount of violence, political assassinations, executions of indigenous rights defenders, people in teachers' unions, that kind of thing, those just get washed under the rug. Since there's so much bloodshed, so many bodies falling, and nobody investigates anything, it becomes a perfect cover of impunity, a kind of cloak of impunity to be spread over this whole other process of conquest. In fact, the events that led to the writing of Mexico Unconquered that I reported on directly took place throughout the year of 2006, especially, and then a little bit in 2007. And as I was sitting down to write the book in 07, 08, I was watching the drug war unfold and unspiral, started reporting on it at the same time. It's like, we can't ignore this. We can't, as someone involved in...
Did you expect it, though? I mean, when you were writing and researching this, I mean, didn't you see that this was going to be the result of them cracking down on this thing? And the reason it's 5% of the murders get investigated by the police is oftentimes... It was the police.
Absolutely. Yeah, I mean, look at the numbers. In Ciudad Juarez, when they sent the army into the streets, the execution rate doubled. When they replaced the army with the federal police, the execution rate went up again by 50%. So how do you explain a city with 1.5 million inhabitants, some 5,000-plus federal militarized police patrolling the city nonstop? You can't go outside and walk down the street anywhere in the city for 5 minutes and not see a convoy of masked federal police with, you know, mounted machine guns and assault rifles aimed in the streets. Can't see them go by, and yet 7 to 10 bodies drop a day and nobody gets caught.
Okay, all right. Let's try to equate. Now, you live in California, right?
Back and forth. I've spent most of the past 5 years in Mexico, and I come back up to California once, twice a year.
Okay, so, I mean, you're familiar with America.
Very much so. Born and raised in Texas.
Okay, so... You're looking at the United States and Mexico, and I've done this because we've traveled to Mexico. So not recently, though. I mean, I'm just kind of like, I'm good. But I took my young children, whenever we would cross across the border, I would always make the point, I go, watch, when we cross this imaginary line in the desert, you're going to have prosperity and paved roads and, you know, leashed dogs and convenience stores that are air-conditioned and whatever and bathrooms, okay? You go across this line, all of a sudden everything changes. Why? Well, it's, you know, the bottom line is respect for property rights, and government defends individual rights so that when people do bad stuff, you know, you can pretty much count on the bad guys going to jail. Well, that's, you know, rapidly going away. But I'm looking at where you say you have armed men, masked, no less, and probably not a name badge on, out in the streets. That's where we're going. And I'm going, why is it that you have so much death and destruction there and not so much here? I mean, it's getting up. It's going to happen. So then you get into this Second Amendment, people able to defend themselves kind of thing. Do you see that as a detriment or a solution in Mexico? And then when we come back, we'll get you on this, because I want to finish with this. We have an attempt by the United States, had a program to where the BATF was wanting, sending, and pushing firearms into Mexico as some kind of an op to justify something. There's something weird going on. What happened if the people in Mexico were able to defend themselves? Would that be better? Not? We'll talk about it.
And now, live from the studios of Freedom's Phoenix, Ernest Hancock.
Welcome back to Declare Your Independence. I'm Ernest Hancock and our new best friend, John Gibler. He's author of To Die in Mexico, Dispatches from Inside the Drug War. Now, here's someone that spent years researching this book and right before it, he had another book. He followed up with this one. And the previous book is Mexico Unconquered, Chronicles of Power and Revolt. Now, This is who else? I mean, before we even get into telling how great and wonderful you are, which of course you are, is where is this news coming from another direction? Is there any newspaper in Mexico? Are there other authors, are there any, you know, news magazines, is anybody else on television anywhere that exposing the kind of information that you're putting out here, and how come you're not dead?
Well, the first question, definitely there's some excellent Mexican reporters that are reporting on this all in Spanish, but there are local news weeklies like one called Rio Dulce in Culiacan, Sinaloa. El Diario in Ciudad Juarez has done really excellent reporting. The national news weekly called Proceso does consistently good reporting. And there's several reporters, individual reporters that I always follow, a woman named Marcela Turati and a young man named Diego Osorno, are both excellent, excellent reporters, and going to the heart of both the human side of all these stories as well as the political manipulation involved in the drug war. Diego has a great book in Spanish called El Cartel de Sinaloa, The Political Use of the Drug Wars, the subtitle. And then Marcela's book is called Crossfire. It's really excellent about looking into all of the intense, devastating social impacts of the violence. So in Mexico, there's excellent work being done.
Are their lives threatened?
Absolutely. I mean, the lives of the local beat reporters are the people who really work under, I think, the most serious threat and conditions. I interviewed a man named Javier Valdez one time. I asked him whether or not he ever been threatened with death, and he looked at me and said, look, it's not necessary that somebody shows up at your office with a 9mm to threaten you. Living here is a threat. Living and reporting on this every day is already a threat. And it's true. I mean, he says, you know, when you write an article, you're thinking about the capo or the mafia dude or the corrupt local police commander who's not going to like it and drives around with a convoy of five vehicles can show up at your house in the morning.
Have any journalists been killed over this?
More journalists have been killed in Mexico in the past 4 years than any other country on the planet. In the past 2 years alone, more than 30 journalists have been killed. All those cases remain in utter impunity.
Okay. All right. This is serious, and it affects us here in America also. And it's what we have to look forward to. But it's not just because it's this one single issue. It's not because of drug prohibition. Drug prohibition is a symptom of a much larger, we wish to control your social and economic behavior. I mean, if we want to look at the same kind of, we run everything, we just look at our economy. You know, there we went. Mexico already had that problem a long time ago. So now we're looking at, all right, if we want to avoid this path, we need to look at certain things. And this gun issue, we've been covering this a lot on Freedom's Phoenix. Every now and then we'll get a story up, and it goes like this. Yeah, all those assault weapons that they keep talking about that were going down to Mexico for the bad guys. Well, it was a BATF sting operation. They made the retailers sell them to them so they could track them and kind of blame it on and do. So what they're finding out, there's no shortage of guns down there anyway. They just wanted to link the United States' ability to have semi-automatic battle rifles with what's going on in Mexico and take political advantage of it. So tell me, how strict are the gun laws in Mexico?
Mexico has incredibly strict gun laws. You can't own any kind of a firearm without permission from the Army, from the Secretary of Defense. And even there, most people are only able to get access to low-caliber hunting rifles like .22s for, you know, hunting rabbits, maybe a shotgun. And then there are abilities, for example, for private security firms to get access to other kinds of weapons, but all those permits, again, come through the Army. So it's very strict prohibition.
Is there any shortage of firearms?
No shortage whatsoever. No, I mean, there's a thriving black market.
There's a shortage of firearms for the good guys that don't want to go to jail, that don't have a police buddy, that aren't on somebody's payroll, the, you know, rank and file individuals walking down the street. They are not allowed to defend themselves, okay? So now I'm asking, you know, what do you think should happen? You know, is it, do you think you're going to be able to, well, you already got the laws. I mean, how are you going to round up all these guns? You know, the idea of allowing people to be armed to defend themselves, does that go against your, I don't know, your philosophy? You don't see it as a solution? What do you think?
Well, two things real quick. Personally, I might be a weird lefty. I'm a total lefty, but a weird one in the sense that I don't believe in gun prohibition. Personally, I grew up in Texas in the countryside, and I grew up around guns and was taught gun safety by my father. And, you know, me and my brother kind of like that. We grew up hunting. But I don't think it here simply changing gun laws in Mexico would really produce any kind of significant change, because the nature of power is such that the laws on the books don't even matter anyway. As is evidenced now, you've got these strict gun laws and they're systematically violated. I think the way the drug war is manipulated by the state and exercises, you've said, of social control, that's the heart of the issue.
Yeah, see, but you, the gun thing, I mean, at least it gives you a fighting chance. It allows you to fight. It gives you the ability.
But it kind of doesn't, because the people, like, just if we jumped into the way it is right now, the people working for the cartels, most of them came out of the police forces and military forces. They don't only have access to guns, but they come out of a training experience. These are highly capable killers, sadly. I mean, they're very well-trained professional killers.
I want the 28-year-old mother of three to be a capable killer in defense of her family and her children. To deny her that is, you're just as bad as the bad guys.
I agree in terms of that. I don't want to deny anybody training or capability to defend themselves. I also want to think about how do we structure a society such that this level of violence just doesn't take place. It just doesn't become an issue.
No. I'm with you, brother. I mean, you know, I'm not saying, you know, give everybody guns going to fix it. That's not going to do it. You know,
right.
What happens is it's just part of a much larger freedom philosophy that the whole purpose of government is the defense of the individual's right to, you know, keep breathing in and out. I mean, if you're not there to promote my breathing in and out without interference from anybody, and certainly the government, well, then you're a bad guy. I mean, you know, what the hell good are you? Why are you here? You know, we're from the government. We're here to help. Yeah, well, you find the masked gunmen standing on every corner in their little convoy with their mask on. So I'm not sure that anybody in Mexico with this kind of occupation is feeling a lot better. So I'm looking at a base philosophy. It can't just be drug prohibition. That is a symptom of a much larger problem. And the problem is people that believe that they can orchestrate your social and economic life in every respect, and then when you don't comply, you have to die. And that's what's happening. So I'm going, all right, Calderon is there. I remember when he first came in and the big, you know, he knew some libertarians and former roommates of and guys and kind of sort of knew how to spell libertarian. And the thing is, they were expecting he was going to be much more freedom-oriented. Well, maybe economically he, you know, kind of waved his hand on it a little bit. But really, it's just more been the same. So I'm going, why did he embrace this drug war so much? And since it's become an obvious failure, why does he continue it? And what is the mood and the opinion of the people? What do they want him to do?
He entered office, we should recall, with the weakest mandate, the weakest sense of legitimacy of any president in the 20th century in Mexico. He sent the army into the streets in his first weeks in office. I think it was more as a gesture of a show of strength. He wanted to show himself as being a strong.
He's strong. When we come back, we'll let John finish his thought on this, because I'm very interested. What do the people want the president of Mexico to do? We'll find out when we come back.
Roads? It's the Ernest Hancock Show. Where we're going, there aren't any roads.
Overseas, yeah, we trying to stop terrorism, but we still got terrorists here living in the USA, the big CIA, the Bloods and the Crips and the KKK. But if you only have love for your own race, then you only leave space to discriminate, and to discriminate only generates hate, and when you hate, then you're bound to get irate. Yeah, madness is what you demonstrate, and that's exactly how anger works and operates. Man, you gotta have love to set it straight. Take control of your mind and meditate. Let your soul gravitate to the love, y'all.
People killing, people dying, children hurting, and crying. Can you practice what you preach? And would you turn the other cheek? Father, 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 help us. Send some guidance from above. These people got me questioning.
Oh, right here on Declare Your Independence. Independence. I'm Ernest Hancock here in Phoenix, Arizona, with John Gibler, author of To Die in Mexico, Dispatches from Inside the Drug War. This is an important issue. I want to get, we're going to, Sierra, go ahead and find, put in his name, find everything he's ever written about anything, and go ahead and start putting it up. We're going to put it up on today's archive show, and we'll start putting it up on Freedom's Phoenix and promote the book. Because I am very certain that what's going to happen there is going to continue to expand and come here. And what the politicians are going to do is they want to embrace and use that violence to expand more police state power. If it wasn't for Dr. Paul in a Republican GOP Fox News debate, get up and say, yep, the drug war is bad. Drugs bad. Drug war worse. Okay? And this is a very important issue. And I got to ask John, the people in Mexico, they're screaming for them to what?
They're screaming for this to stop. I mean, one of the...
What
the,
to stop?
It's the bloodshed. I mean, the rallying cry of the whole movement right now is No Más Sangre, which means no more blood.
Well, of course, every politician, you know, worth the salt's going to get up and say, yeah, I'm for or against the violence. We got to do something to stop the violence. And whatever their solution is isn't going to stop the violence. I mean, we have to end the prohibition. Is there a call for that?
In fact, there is. And that's amazing because Mexico is a predominantly Catholic country and the Catholic Church's power has been used to just as similar in the United States where linking drugs to all sorts of moral generalizations and saying, okay, these are evils and so they have to be completely, you know, banned by society. And yet the bloodshed, the violence, the impunity, and the corruption have become so bad that even in a predominantly Catholic country, people are now saying, no, we need to do whatever it takes to stop this. Prohibition, let's get rid of it. Let's talk about legalization.
Okay, who's talking about it? Let me put it this way. There will be, an anti-war movement and whatever movement, their political movement, somebody wants to consolidate. I've seen this happen over and over. You pick your issue, whatever's hot that day. In Mexico, I don't know anything. I'm going to tell you what I think is happening right, not later, and you tell me if I'm wrong. There will be a collectivizing central force that will come in the name of some group. And they will, we need an umbrella group. We need to consolidate all the forces and the power of the people and, you know, unite us against the evil forces of. And they will have all of the prominent people that have made a name for themselves and have influence in various different groups and geographic and philosophical discipline, you know, whatever their point that they're making and the followers that have them, they'll put them into one group or one meeting or one rally or one something where they'll have a single website or something that will link to all these guys. Then they'll go, we need to have a fill in the blank, whatever the heck it is. And I guarantee it that it will be a soft end of prohibition kind of thing. A little bit of regulation. It will not end the drug war. So you tell me, there is a group that's trying to consolidate everybody under one thing, right?
As soon as, I agree with you, as soon as that happens, as soon as everybody gets pushed into one umbrella and people lose their own voices and lose their autonomy, then you surrendered. You know, you gave up. And that is going to be the principal challenge of the social movement that is growing right now, which you know, has begun with the family members of people who've been killed, who simply had nothing to do with the drug industry. And it's also important to point out, even if somebody was buying some drugs or even selling some drugs on a street corner,
so
that's the death penalty. We don't have the death penalty for that. So you can't say, oh, well, they were up to something. That can never be an excuse.
Okay, so Calderon, he wants to bring the guys in. You know, we need to talk about this. We got it. You know, who's the main politician? Who's the party? Who's the in Mexico that are trying to, you know, jump in front of this big, giant, No Más Blood parade?
Well, so far the political parties have not tried to jump in explicitly, and if they do, they will be very unwelcome. The government, Calderon is actually the first person who wants to try and take it over, to say, yes, let's come dialogue together. In fact, Calderon invited Javier Cecilia, the poet father whose son was killed, to talk to a meeting. And Cecilia, very wisely, I think, said, no, if you want to talk, we'll do it at the National Palace, in public, full media access. Anyone can come who can fit in there. And you're not just talking to me, you're talking to everybody. He called for a meeting of the social group folks in Ciudad Juarez, and Calderon tried to jump into it. The Ciudad Juarez groups all immediately put out, you know, their own press releases and, you know, information on the website, on their website, saying, Javier Cecilia, you're welcome. Come, let's talk. Felipe Calderon, you're not welcome. We don't want to talk to you.
Okay, another point. When they bring the people that will jump in front of this bandwagon, yeah, we all got to meet, and we're all the guys, and so on, they will bring a whole bunch of other baggage. We need to have social reform, de la whatever. Tax the rich, redistribute to the poor, do the yada, yada, yada. It has absolutely nothing to do with prohibition. Again, am I correct?
We have to wait and see. Since all of this is very new in Mexico, the like serious talk of drug policy reform, and by reform, I should mean change, like changing the existing drug policies. There's no history of it, like in the United States, where processes, like you just said, have often taken place.
Okay, how old is this? How long has this uprising of the people going to the streets, how long has it happened? Days, weeks, months, years? How long?
Uprisings happening that nobody's paid attention to for about 2 or 3 years. The uprising happening that people are starting to pay attention to, because as you said, it involved a famous guy, it's only been going on for about 2 months.
All right. I can see where this is going. You know, I've seen it. The anti-war movement here in the United States, you know, we've been at war for over a decade, longer than Vietnam and Afghanistan. Where's the anti-war movement? You know, we still got this drug issue thing. Where's that? It's all gets co-opted by someone, and I guarantee you it gets co-opted in Mexico if the people are not able to keep themselves as individuals and small groups and a philosophy against it. And it's for freedom, not, you know, against some individual or go get this one drug dealer and everything's going to be set. You know, we know better than that. And nobody wants drugs illegal more than the government and the drug cartels. Without the drug war, they don't make any money, either of them.
Exactly.
So is this well understood by the people in Mexico and the Catholic Church?
The Catholic Church, no. The Catholic Church, in its majority, is totally aligned with the state, especially with Felipe Calderon's conservative right-wing party. There are dissident factions of the Catholic Church, especially up in the north, for example. I think it's Leo with Raul Vera, who's of the kind of liberation theology bent of the Catholic Church. But I think it's also important to point out, you know, you're coming from a libertarian philosophy and perspective where individual freedom is the kind of ground from which other discussions, important, urgent philosophical and social discussions take place. I think in Mexico it's slightly different. There, the one word you might use is autonomy, because it's not only conceived as an individual liberty issue, but always as a social liberty issue. So people in communities coming together of their own free will, so as individuals entering into a space where freedom is completely respected, and then that becomes a social freedom, autonomy. And so the idea of autonomous, like groups autonomously not being forced into a hierarchy, not being made to bow to some other leader or party, that is, I think, the hope of these resistance movements.
Yeah, I know. But then you get somebody gets to define what community means. It's really simple to define what an individual is. Individual is me, myself, alone, one person. A community kind of gets into this amorphous, whatever they, you know, our community decided that your individualism doesn't count. You know, I understand. We're gonna go ahead and stay there. I want to talk to you after the break. But I'm really excited that this is coming to the front of the discussion. I mean, people are dying on a regular basis, on a mass scale. Bullets riddling. And we have the United States freaking departments of the government that are helping. They're promoting it. They're encouraging it. They're a part of it. You don't think so? Yeah, I know you guys know. But we can make use of it in this election cycle because we're all human beings. Peace. We'll be right back with Miss Shedlock in the second hour. Uncovering the secrets and exposing the lies. That's what readers of freedomsphoenix.com get every day. Readers of freedomsphoenix.com are constantly provided the information that detail the real news between the lines of propaganda about government policies and the true relationship we all have with coercive governments. Learn the true condition of our economy, innovations and technological breakthroughs in energy, health, computer science, and space travel. Learn the truth well before it's admitted to in the lamestream media, the media that is so last century. Corporate media has evolved into nothing more than distributors of government propaganda, but we now have a fantastic alternative. FreedomsPhoenix.com provides constant news updates on the issues that affect our lives in the most important ways. Our liberty and our property are under constant attack, and FreedomsPhoenix.com provides the understanding behind the propaganda while encouraging the participation of our readers. Join us at FreedomsPhoenix.com. That's Freedoms with an S, Phoenix.com. FreedomsPhoenix.com, where the revolution between the ears has already moved. Tour.